Hi there, James Wedmore here, and welcome to this very special audio recording that I have put together for you on the 7 secrets of successful entrepreneurs. I know there's a lot of S's in there, but we also have a lot to go over, and I'm really excited. So the intention for this audio, so this is an audio I've been wanting to create, wanting to record for some time now. And if you already know me, you know that what I specialize in my coaching and teaching has to do primarily with online video, video marketing, video creation, and YouTube marketing. So anything that has to do with making a video on the internet in order to get you more customers, more sales, more traffic, and more leads, you can bet that I've done some sort of product, content, training, video, or audio on it over the past few years. And something I've wanted to do for some time was to get my business to a certain level of success where I could have a conversation with other entrepreneurs, whether you're brand new or you've been in business for years or decades, about the topic of success in general, what it takes to be successful, and even more specifically, successful online in this day and age with online entrepreneurship and all the opportunities we have and all the new problems that we have as entrepreneurs, how to face those, look at those through a different lens, solve those problems, and perform at a higher level. And at the time of this recording, it's the end of 2014. I started my business over 6 years ago, almost 7 years ago, in my parents' basement. We'll get into my story in a little bit. But I've been wanting to do this audio for about 2 years now, and I said once I hit $1 million in revenue in 1 year, I will do that. And let's see, September 28th, I believe, 27th, something like that. End of September, I hit $1 million in revenue for the year 2014, so which is a very exciting accomplishment. We actually have now over tripled revenue just in 1 year. I've been able to hire some incredible people, and right now I'm experiencing just some awesome growth as an online entrepreneur. I said, okay, now is the time to kind of reflect back on what worked, what didn't, as well as share some of the observations I've had. I've had a very fortunate opportunity to get to know, work with, network with, mastermind with some very successful online entrepreneurs, people that have built a very comfortable living, built a very successful business, using nothing but their laptop, the comfort of their home, working when they want, something that we're all after, something I knew I was hungry for a long, long time ago. So there are 7 things I'm going to share with you. Now, here's my real intention. I want that you to absorb this. I want this to like just start to become part of your DNA. And so the best part to do this is I've been a huge fan of audio podcasts, just audio recordings. I listen to at least a minimum 30 minutes a day of something, whether it's a podcast, an audio tape, a YouTube audio that I'll just play in the background, and I'll go for a walk. And I'd love for you, if you download this, put this on your mobile device or whatever, and just start listening to some of these things. Now, you don't have to agree with me on any of these. These are just from my observations. These are my distinctions from the results and the experience that I've had over the 6.5-7 years that I've had in business. So we're going to get into those in a moment. What I want to do first is take a step back and look at that journey from I just laugh saying it, from working in my parents' basement basically to a successful 7-figure business, and even what we have in store in the next oncoming years. I mean, the way I look at it, things have just begun for me. So I've always been very entrepreneurial to begin with. In fact, when I was 15, I was making $1,000 to $2,000 a week selling motorcycles and used motorcycles and motorcycle parts on a little site called ebay.com. And in fact, this was back in 1998 when people didn't know what eBay was. I was writing checks and sending these checks in the mail to eBay because it was so long ago they couldn't even accept credit cards back then. They didn't have a credit card processing payment back then. It was very, very funny. So what I was doing was buying motorcycles, old bikes from the 60s and 70s in our local newspapers, Penny Saver and Recycler. Craigslist wasn't around then. And I would dismantle the entire bike and sell it piece by piece. And I could buy a bike for $300 to $500 because the person didn't want it. It was all busted. The engine didn't work, so it had no value to them. And I would sell the parts individually and make much more by selling the part individually. So I could buy a bike for $500 and sell it for about $2,500, and I would do about a bike or two a week. And when I was 17 years old, I was making good money as a high schooler, a teenager. And I will always remember getting called in to the counselor's office because we had a career day at the school where we were supposed to pick our career, and I made a complete mockery of it. And the counselor saw this as a huge warning sign that I wasn't taking my future or my career very seriously. And I was young and rude and proceeded to tell him that I was making more money than he was at the time and that he didn't know what he was talking about. But needless to say, I was a young and rebellious kid. But needless to say, I had some desire at that age to not go the standard route of, you know, get a specific job with a specific title, but instead to create something myself and do it on my own terms. And I think that's partly what defines most of us as entrepreneurs. And even at that age, way back then, 15 and on, I was looking at the internet as a solution. College did come around and I did get distracted. Went to a university called Chapman University. It's City of Orange, Southern California. And I was actually a film major. I kind of started to be reintroduced to a lifetime passion that I also had, which was video and filmmaking. And so got to see film at a whole nother angle and through a whole nother lens and have a whole new respect as well as really a whole new skill set for it. And I graduated college and had no desire to do anything going towards the film industry. But what I was doing to pay my bills through college was not just the eBay, still selling stuff on eBay, but I became a bartender. And I did get fired from my bartending job, which then really sparked the idea of bringing the entrepreneurial side into my bartending. And that's when I started doing something that I kind of made up the term. I created it myself. I've never heard anyone else use this before, called mobile bartending, where I would offer my services as a bartender to weddings, private parties, corporate events, birthdays, you name it. And by the time I had graduated college, my mobile bartending business was in full effect. In fact, one of the very first books I read right out of college was a book by Dan Kennedy called No BS Business Success. And that book, that along with Think and Grow Rich, right? Most entrepreneurs have read that by now. That book had a profound impact on my life because the first chapter really described the definition, Dan Kennedy's definition at least, of what it means to be an entrepreneur. And I was like, for the first time, someone understands me. This is who I am. And so I started using his teaching, his content, went to his seminars to apply his business and marketing principles to this little bartending business that I had. And within a year, I had done things like I figured out how to build a website. So I built it from scratch. I figured out how to get that website ranked at the number one position in Google for Orange County Bartender or Bartender Southern California. And within a year, I had a staff of 15 bartenders and cocktail waitresses servicing everywhere from San Diego to north of Los Angeles, and started to see some incredible growth. But I knew in the back of my head that it wasn't where I was meant to be. It wasn't where I was going to be for very long. There was something pulling me in another direction. And it was actually listening to some Dan Kennedy material way back in the day when I discovered or had an observation that his successful students, the most successful students he had, were the ones that were teaching what they were doing versus just doing it. So the real estate agent that taught you how to flip homes was making more money teaching the flipping of the homes versus being a realtor. Or the dentist who created a program on how to get more dentist clients was making more money with that than actually being a dentist. And that's when the light bulb hit for me. And this was November of 2007. I came up with the idea, Bartend for Profit. And that's really when the entire journey began. I dropped everything I was doing. I focused 100%, I'm saying 14 to 15 hour days in front of a computer to figure out exactly how I was going to sell an online training program teaching bartenders how to do what I had done. Everything from how to become a bartender to how to work in a bar to how to increase your tips and do become a mobile bartender. I did it all. And it took several months, and there were a lot of costs. And I don't just mean costs like expenses, but I mean costs with relationships. I had a girlfriend leave me at that time. My friends just gave up on me, and my health started to suffer a lot. I lost a lot of weight. I was in front of a computer, you know, for hours on end, and that's all that mattered to me. But in that process, I learned a lot, and it was, again, end of 2007 when I had the idea, April 18th, 2008 was when I made my very first sale, for Bartend for Profit, a $200, program that actually still sells today, miraculously. And that was a huge turning point for me. And I know anyone who's had any type of proof that their idea works, it's sometimes that's all we need for us to keep going. And that's what it was for me. Now, that product never went on to make my millions or anything like that. It would make maybe $2,000 a month. But it was enough to give me the hope, the encouragement, and reignite a fire to say, I'm on to something. I really am. Now, a lot of other things happened from then on, but people were always fascinated by this kid who had carved out a very unique niche of teaching other bartenders how to bartend. But they were also interested and fascinated by one other element that I had going for me, and that was this creative use of video that I was using. In fact, the very first customer I had, we have on the checkout form, how did you hear about us? And they wrote youtube.com. And I started getting all these views on my YouTube channel in 2008 for people watching my bartending videos. And then you'd go to my webpage and there'd be a video. And back then, that was a huge novelty, somebody having video. Back then, it was, if you had audio on your site, it was impressive. And this fledgling site, YouTube, that was only about 3 years old at the time, most people were not on it. Most people had never created a video. It was still challenging to get video onto the internet. And so eventually, it took a while, but I saw a huge opportunity in that. And that really fast forward till 2011 when I launched my first true flagship program, Video Traffic Academy, a course that I sold with a business partner of mine, Lewis Howes, for just $97, $100 course. Some of you may have it or have heard of it. And we went on in 30 days to do over $400,000 in sales with that product. In 30 days for a $97 course. And today it's done, I would say, over $2 million in sales, but that's just a rough estimate, probably more than that. But I'm just throwing a random number out there. But yes, $400,000 in 30 days for a $97 product. It was pretty amazing, and obviously it was life-changing. It put me on the map as in the niche and in the space for online video and video marketing, and that's really what I've been doing ever since. But something you might notice if you're a new customer or past customer, something I always do is I am a teacher at heart, and really I love much more than teaching video. I love much more the psychology, the motivation, and the mindset that goes into entrepreneurship, what makes one person successful and someone not successful. And that's really where this audio is. That's really what a lot of my content in my page programs goes into, because a long time ago when I was just getting started, the advice that I kept hearing was stuff like, take action, take massive action, you gotta take action. And let me tell you, I took that advice, I did take action, and still nothing worked. And when I looked at my first sale of Bartend for Profit back there in 2008, I had lost about 30 pounds. I was down to about 145 pounds. I had no friends left. I had my girlfriend had dumped me. I was living at home. I was exhausted. I was addicted to Adderall and caffeine. And I was working 14-hour days. And I was taking action, at least what I thought was action. I thought if you just work harder and do more, you'll be more successful. And I've learned today that that is absolutely not the case. Because that limits you at some point, right? That there's only so much action you can take. There's only so much hours in the day and so much effort that you can exert before you've capped out. Yet some people can keep going. So, you know, even though we all have the same amount of hours in the day, there are some people that can perform at a whole nother level and accomplish things that we wonder and are in awe of, that get results that we're like, how do they do that? They have the same amount of time as me. I run three errands and I'm exhausted for the day, right? Well, there are some principles and habits and things, nothing that I've invented here that you've probably never heard, but these are a collection of both the observations I've had personally and also the wisdom I've and lessons I've learned over the years just from reading and absorbing and learning new stuff myself. So that's what brings us to this point here. So hopefully you're excited to get started. These are the 7 secrets of successful entrepreneurs. Okay, let's take a look at the first of 7 secrets, which is to be coachable. This was profound for me because until you really ask the question, am I being coachable? It's very easy, especially for someone like me, I can only speak for myself, to be very stubborn, to be, oh, I have to be a know-it-all, I have to know everything there is, and that can be very, very dangerous. And one of my favorite quotes and kind of how I live my life now is, what got you here won't get you there. And all the success that you've had, all the results, all the actions and habits have gotten you to this place in time, and we can, commend you for that success. We can celebrate that success, but what lies ahead, what you want to create from today moving forward, may mean a whole new way of being. It may mean that you have to act differently. It may mean that the actions that you had to get you here are going to actually cause problems for you at the next leg of the journey. Okay, and we'll kind of go in and give you some examples of that, but it's a powerful, powerful line of what got you here won't get you there. Then there's the whole concept of, and this is really what hit home for me about being coachable, is that we have a collection of data, facts, figures, information, past experiences, and we've clumped that all into a category of what we would call what we know. So there's this category of what I know, and each of us have our own category, and maybe if we've lived longer, we have a bigger bin of information on what we know. But then we also have a category of everything else that's what you don't know, right? So you might know that you don't know how to play the guitar, or you don't know how to speak Mandarin. So you have this second category of everything else that exists that you don't know. I don't know what Iceland looks like, or I don't know what it's like to live in Iceland, because you've never lived there, been there, right? Could be a great example. But this is where most of us tend to live and remain. But there is, of course, another category, and that is the things that you don't know that you don't know. The things that you do not know that you don't even know. And it really starts to open up an idea that there is more opportunity or possibility available to us when we can expand up beyond just what we know and what we don't know. For example, there are not only instruments that you don't know how to play, but there are instruments that you don't even know that exist that you don't know how to play. And that's a great example of something that you don't know that you don't know it. And so what I like to call this area, or this third category, which is basically everything else, you don't know what you don't know. I believe that this is much larger of a category than what you know and what you don't know. I think what we know is a fraction, a very small fraction, and there's a whole lot of other stuff that, yeah, I know I don't know that. And then there's this entire huge category of what we don't know that we don't know. And really the only way that you can start to discover that, I think step one is all about being coachable. Now, being coachable can be tricky, so we want to ask the question, am I being coachable? Am I receiving this information? Because I believe we tend to receive information through a specific lens, a specific filter of the world, where we really take someone's information, and you're probably doing that with this audio yourself, and say, okay, I'm hearing what this person is saying. How does this fit in to everything I already know? Now, notice what happens there. We're taking new information, and we say, okay, what is this also like that I already know? How does this fit in to what I already know, or how I already see the world, or how I already see business or life or success? And we look for things that validate our past experiences or our past beliefs or our current beliefs, and negate or even choose just not to hear something because it doesn't fit in with that. And so to truly be coachable, I think is super hard. It can be super challenging, but it's to have a level of openness and receptivity, if that's the right word, to accept information, whether it agrees with what you know or don't know, because it could be within this realm of, I don't know what I don't know. And I think that really is the first step to all of this, is to be able to, with the right, obviously, coach or mentor, receive a whole new set of information and trust that. Now, there's a caveat here, and I've been asked this when I teach this before, of, are you being coachable? I mean, that's the question you want to ask now, and I'll get to that in a second, is, are you being coachable? But we can be coachable and uncoachable from one moment to the next, and we can be coachable and uncoachable with certain people in our lives. So if a crazy person on the street gives you advice, you don't have to be coachable with that individual. But if someone that you respect and look up to gives you information, you know, you don't necessarily want to say, yeah, but no, that doesn't work. You know, it's a great opportunity to say, am I just trying to be right and save face and not look bad? Or is this something that I can benefit from? Does this person truly have information that can help me? And do they have my best intention? And if they do, if the answer is yes, then am I being coachable? Or am I just being difficult or stubborn? And working one-on-one with students, working virtually with students and in person, I can tell you it makes the job of the coach a lot easier when the student is open, receptive, and coachable. So what we're going to do next to all of these seven secrets is you're going to if you're walking and you don't have a pen or paper, that's fine. But what I'd love for you to do is make a note next to each of these and see where you rate on a scale of 1 to 10 for each of these. So 10 being like an absolute hell yeah, and a 1 is like a not really. So the question now is, not necessarily in this moment, but, you know, as an average or medium across the board, how coachable are you when it comes to business, marketing, and online entrepreneurship? A 10 would mean if we got on the phone and I told you to do something, there would be no resistance. You would say, absolutely, it'll be done on this day. And a 1 is saying, you don't know what you're talking about, James. I know what to do, okay? So if there's no right or wrong, there's only what's accurate for you. Don't lie to yourself. But to identify where you are is going to be very powerful with each of these. So if you're a 10, you're super coachable. If you're a 1, you're not at all coachable. And one of the most valuable things, and one of the reasons why I share this, especially as the first one, is because the more experience that we gain, the longer we're in this, the more we tend to lower on this scale. And that can be one of the most dangerous things that we do, is lower our coachability. I am still learning, growing, reading. I just hired a new business coach. He's $10,000 plus a couple thousand a month, and I'll never stop that, because I'll always remain coachable. It's just I'm probably going to continue to raise my level of who I'm being coachable with, and even that is inaccurate. I want to be able to learn from everyone and everything. Okay, so that's the first one, right? So we're going to play around with all of these and spend some time on this. This isn't meant to be like, all right, get me through this as quick as I can. I just need to know the 7. This is meant to be a process and an experience to play with each of these and take some introspection to see, where do I stand here? The last thing I'll lead you with, which I just think is, you know, so accurate to see if you really are coachable, is have you ever read a book where you liked the book, loved it, whatever, but then you went back and you read it again. And when you read it a second time, what happened? You experienced it in a whole new way, or you learned something new, or you read information or saw something that wasn't there the first time around. And what was that? How does that happen? That's happened to all of us if we've read a book more than once. It hasn't. Go pick up a book that you haven't read in a while that you already did. And that is a little bit into our lens or our filter or how we see the world. Every experience that we have and every day that we have, that lens can shift, it can change, it can grow, it can add new to it. So if you read a book once, you're not the same person as who you were the first time, right? So that you're a whole new person the second time you read it. And that's why we want to be as coachable as possible, so you don't have to read a book 10 times to get everything that the author is saying. What if you could get it all? And even though it's impossible, it's what we want to strive for. What if you could get it all the first time around? And when I'm more when I'm open myself up to being coachable and I read a new book, I can just experience how much more open and receptive I am. So that's secret number one. Let's now talk about the next secret. Okay, success secret number two is to be responsible. Now, this is going to be probably the hardest for people to listen to. This is the one that people get most resistant to because there is a huge payoff when you blame others or external variables or factors for why things are the way they are. So I'm sure we've all had an experience where we get mad at a customer who, if you've been in business already and have customers, you would blame a customer. I've done this for their feedback, their comments, a rude remark. We've blamed the economy or the government for why things are the way they are, right? Or specific industries for why they are the way they are. And even specific things within our industry, like, oh, Facebook just made a whole new change as my business is done, or I got to redo everything I have, or email's dead, my email deliverability's down, or, you know, this social network isn't working anymore, or this technology's not good enough, or, you know, AWeber went down. And we, it's very easy. There's a very easy, simple payoff for why we blame external variables or people, places, or things. And it really gets us off the hook. It says, for in that moment, we get to say, hey, it's not my fault. It's their fault. It's Facebook's fault. It's AWeber or the government or, you know, the president. And the problem with this is that blame removes your power. So when your power is removed, it eliminates all possibility or all opportunity for a solution. So if Facebook has done something, like a great example of this is in 2014, the big theme with Facebook was they changed their algorithm in the newsfeed a lot to limit business fan pages from organic reach. So if you have a business fan page and you have a million fans, you put up a new update and you're going to have like 1% of those fans see your stuff. And people got really upset and blamed Facebook. And, you know, rightfully so. We can all sympathize, right? You might be one of those people that are upset. But what is the cost of doing that? When you do that, you put your business, your happiness, your success, your financial destiny in the hands of Facebook. And you give them your power and basically say, I can't now be successful or effective until Facebook changes. And when are they going to change? Never. Maybe 20 years, right? You have to wait for an external variable or something else to change before you can get a result that you want. So it's one of the hardest things to master, but it's this whole concept of being responsible for everything that shows up in your life and in your business. This means social networks, as a great example. This means technology. This means your customers. This means your employees. And obviously, it means yourself, your actions, the words you choose, the habits, etc. Is to be responsible for that, to take responsibility for that. Now, it's not necessarily about taking blame or being at fault or trying to identify who's at fault or who's right or who's wrong. That's not at all what this is about. It's about being responsible. So if we look at the Facebook example again, and you, let's say you have a fan page of 1 million fans, and Facebook decides to say, hey, we're no longer going to show your posts anymore to your 1 million fans. If we keep getting upset at Facebook and say, it's Facebook's fault that my business revenue has gone down, it's Facebook, again, we lose our power. But when we start to take responsibility, the first thing we do is say, okay, well, I'm the one who chose to create a Facebook fan page. I'm the one who chose to create a following on Facebook. And when we trace it back far enough, we start to see, wait a second, I'm the one who created this. I'm the one that made the decisions here. I'm the one that knew the risks. If I create something, a platform on someone else's business, Facebook is a business, that at any moment, something like this could change, like an algorithm shift. They could turn me off or shut me down at a moment's notice. And when you accept that, to say, wait a second, I chose all of that, you, in that second, in that moment, get your power back. And when you have your power back, you now have the opportunity to choose what to do next to either solve the problem or go in a whole new direction. And it's really hard for people to do this, especially if you're having an experience in your life where the sky is falling. But the moment you realize, like, wait a second, I created this, you can create something new, okay? And we could go into this for so much longer. We really could, because I think this is so powerful. But here's the analogy I want to give. You've heard people say life is a game, or life is like a game, or my favorite is life is like a game of chess. So let's use the analogy of life is like a game of chess. Unfortunately, the fallacy with that is, not that it's a fallacy, but the what you'll run into with that is, if life is a game of chess, you're ultimately going to have a winner and a loser. You're going to have fighters. You're going to have people who are, you know, win and you know, lose, and players that are taken off the board and whatnot. And so the great analogy that I learned is, if life is like a game of chess, you and your life is the board. Now imagine a game of chess and you are the board. In that moment, with this analogy, you become 100% responsible for everything that shows up on the board. So the game isn't necessarily about who wins and who loses, or I have to win and they have to lose, because that, you know, that's not very empowering. If they have to lose in order for you to win, but it's your board, then what's showing up on your board is someone is losing. So when you become the board, you take full responsibility for everything that shows up. The successes and the failures, the hiccups, the bumps, the problems, and the solutions. And it's not until you do that, until you take full responsibility, that you'll, you know, you will have full power. So the question always asks, okay, why did this show up? What did I do to allow this to show up? And how can I make sure that it doesn't show up anymore? So the second secret, being responsible, can be challenging. It can be hard. It can be resistant for some people. Hopefully it's not for you. You're like, got it. You know, for me, when I first started learning and going through personal development, people saying you are 100% responsible for creating your reality, for everything that shows up in your life, I loved it. And I was like, bring it on. And some people, they've had some bad things in their life. They've happened. They say, well, I got in a car accident last week. Someone rear-ended me. How am I responsible for that? And of course, the short answer is, say, well, you chose to drive. You chose to be on the road at that moment. You chose to be in front of that car the moment it hit you. And again, it's not about placing blame. It's not a saying he's wrong, I'm right, I deserve this, and blah, blah, blah. That's not the conversation we're having here. It's more about giving you the sense, the feeling, and the of being powerful, in saying that you had a responsibility. You created this on some level, and so you can also create anything else that you want. That life is not just this reactive thing that you're being, you know, blown around in the wind, but that you can actually create it when you choose to be responsible for it. The hard part, of course, is that you have to be responsible for everything, not just the good parts, the bad parts as well. But obviously, when the bad stuff comes in, that's when you want the power to change it or recreate it or create something new, bring something new into your life. So that's the second secret, is to be responsible. And I've seen it with so many entrepreneurs that they just take responsibility for the things in their life. They don't let life be this reactive, sky is always falling mentality. They take responsibility, and I want you to do the same. So the question here is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how right now, up until this point in your life, do you feel you fare up? 10 is 100% absolute responsibility for everything in your life, and 1 is, nope, it's everybody else's fault but mine. And again, it's not about placing blame or fault, but when we do point blame at other people, we are giving up our power and we're not taking a sense of responsibility for it. So where are you on that? 1 through 10, 10 being 100% responsible for everything in your life. And go ahead and just make a note of that right now. Okay, let's move right along. This is the third secret of successful entrepreneurs. I really enjoy this one. And this is a skill. And the skill is, it's an ability to identify and prioritize what will make the difference. I firmly believe that successful entrepreneurs have a keen sense of distinction on the things that they focus on and what things they choose to focus on based on what it will do for them in their business. Okay, so we'll go through this and I'll explain it in more detail, but let me just share with this right now. Let's take a look at your entrepreneurial journey and what you've done so far. If you were to write down a list of all the action items you've ever done in your business, what would that look like? What type of items would be on there? I'm saying stuff that you've personally done, right? For some of us, it might be a super long list. And then if you were to look at that entire list, how many items on that list actually attributed to things that got us to our ultimate destination, the thing that we're after? If you're in business, the goal of a business, the intention of a business is to generate profit and revenue. So how many things on that list actually had a direct correlation or a direct impact on making you money? And for a lot of us, it's slim to none. And a mentor of mine, Craig Ballantyne, good friend as well, talks about the 5%. He said there are only 5% of all the things that need to get done. You know, some of us have seen it as 80-20, but there are 5% of all the things on the list that really do have a direct correlation on moving the ball down the field, on having a direct impact. Did you know that if this was your brand spanking new on the internet, you could make money today on the internet without a website, without email marketing, without really anything? Yet so many people will spend months designing a logo, a business card, getting their website up, their blog, their newsletter, writing 20 articles and setting up all their social media properties. They'll create a podcast. We'll go on and on and on. And they'll say, I haven't made any money yet. Why is that? Because you haven't focused any of your time or energy, or you haven't completed any of the actions that are in that 5% category, the things that will drive the ball down the field, that will have an impact on money, sales, profit, revenue. So obviously there's a couple questions that have probably come up at this point. One is like, okay, how could I make money without a website or without a Twitter account, without branding and all that stuff? I think we'll answer that question much more as we go along, but the simple answer is to provide value for somebody. You know, I could go knock on my neighbor's door right now and say, hey, do you need your lawn trimmed? I noticed that your grass is growing pretty long. I got a lawnmower. You want me to cut your grass? It's $15, right? You know, and that mentality is, hey, someone has a problem. I can provide value by solving that problem. And there's an exchange of money for that. And if you don't think that that is available at every click of the internet, you'd be crazy. And you don't need to have some years of experience. I mean, the years I spent trying to figure it all out was to learn this lesson right here, that all you need to do is provide value to somebody in exchange for money. And we're going to talk about that. That actually kind of overlaps into one of our next secrets. So we'll get to that more in a moment. But here's how we can begin to have a better distinction with what really moves the ball down the field. I believe this is one of the most powerful things that we can do, is be able to identify what will make you money and what won't. Okay, so here's a two or three step process. I'll just call it a two-step process for what you would do. First of all, if you're working on a project, if you're working on a product, if you're working on something, you need to identify an outcome. So we could call this a goal, but it's an outcome, right? And the outcome is going to really include two things. It should include dollars or revenue, and it should have a by when date. So if you say, okay, I want to do $10,000 by March 31st. Okay, so that's our outcome or our outcome goal that we've created for ourselves, that we've identified. So the next part of this, now that we have a monetary goal and a by when date, we need to identify, and this is really important, the factors and the actions that will have the biggest impact on achieving that revenue goal. What are the factors? What elements? What action items? What things will get me to produce that money? And the more we think from a minimalist approach, the more we effective we can get at identifying what goes to the top of that list and what's at the bottom. And if we can prioritize that list, even better. So when things come up, like an action item, a project, something to do, you want to start asking some questions. Questions like, will this help me reach my goal? Will this really help me reach my goal? If my goal is 10,000 by March 31st, is this the best use of my time? Or can someone else do it? Now, a good friend of mine, Marie Forleo, who's the creator of a program called B-School, which I highly recommend, has a great distinction. I believe she created this. If not, I'm still going to give her credit for it, where when she's identifying things that need to be fixed, changed, or worked on, she asks the question, is that a whisper? And by that, she means, is this something that's really going to move the ball down the field, or is this just going to like make it look a little nicer? Right? So improving your logo isn't going to make you sales. Getting new business cards probably isn't going to make you sales, especially online, right? So let me give you an example of this, since I recently got engaged, of using a wedding. Okay, so let's say you are planning a wedding. So identify our outcome. Well, let's just say our outcome is to have 200 people at my wedding on March 31st. Okay, so that's our outcome. So 200 people at a wedding, March 31st. Then what we want to do is we want to, and I'm planning this from scratch, maybe I have a budget, maybe that's part of my outcome goals, is spend less than $50,000 on my wedding for 200 people, March 31st. Okay, now we're getting really clear. Now identify the factors and actions that have the biggest impact. So what are the elements of planning and hosting a wedding that will make it a reality, but won't be a waste of time? So for example, choosing a venue is going to be much higher on the list than, say, having custom-made napkins, right? Okay. Another example is sending out the invitations in time so that people can have time to, you know, put it on their calendar is much more important than, say, choosing what type of stationery to put it on. So when you begin to prioritize what are the essential factors that will get you the result, you just know where to spend your time, okay? And I see too many entrepreneurs are spending their time worrying about what napkin to create or what type of material the invitation should come out on, and they send out the invite too late, or they never send out the invite, and then they wonder why no one showed up to their wedding. You never sent out the invite. In fact, I had a coaching student of mine. He became a great friend of mine, and we worked together for some time. For 16 months after he had left his job, he had 2 years worth of income in the bank to save up so he could start his business. For 16 months, he had a podcast, started his business for 16 months, and he hadn't made a dime. He hadn't made a single dollar. And I had to ask him, why do you think you have not made any money in the past 16 months? And it took him a while. And I wasn't about to rob him of a lesson, but he eventually discovered and had a great breakthrough. He said, I haven't sold anything. Ah! So he'd spent all of his time doing a blog, doing branding, creating great content on a free podcast, but he'd never spent any time selling. And you'll quickly just see as we go through these secrets that selling is going to be one of those things in the 5% category. Those are going to be the things that get you the down the field, that get you that result, the 10,000 by March 31st, right? Getting the invites and having a place for people to be on a specific date, those are the priorities. Now think about this for a second. If I were going to have a wedding and there were only five things that I could do to make sure that that wedding gets off, what would they be? It would be things like choose a date, choose a venue, get the invites out. Everything else could start to fall down lower on the list after that, right? You can't plan what colors, what your color scheme is and worry about that if you don't even have a venue. Because what's the point of having a color scheme if there's no place for people to be, if no one can even show up, right? So that ability to say, to identify what is working or what will move the ball down the field, what will have a direct correlation on the money is powerful. Powerful. It's not about staying busy. It's not about filling your day with as many action items as you can so that you go, ooh, I'm productive. Look at all I got done. Yeah, but did any of that you got done move you closer to the result that you're after? Did that get you more revenue? Did it get you closer to your goal? And if the answer is no, it says, well, what was the point of being productive without this ability and without this distinction? So again, just like we've done with the other two secrets, I want you to kind of rate where you feel your ability is on that. A 10 means you have a very keen mastery of the distinction between the action items that do bring you money and the action items that, you know, can fall underneath that. I'm not saying they're necessarily less important, but if we are ignoring that 5% of items, things like selling, then you won't see any revenue. So 10 is a keen mastery and 1 is I have no idea whatsoever. And anywhere in between you get to gauge, okay? So you wanna make a mental note or write that down for secret number 3. Hopefully you're taking notes on this. Okay, that is our third secret to successful online entrepreneurship. All right, we're moving right along. Welcome to the fourth secret, which is to create a distinction of principles. There are timeless marketing principles and there are principles that are industry specific, okay? And we're gonna talk about these principles, but basically the reason why this became one for this audio is because I see how enamored people get by flashy tactics, by what's new, what's hot, what's sexy. And that is a surefire recipe for failure and disaster. This is where that shiny red ball syndrome comes in. You get distracted. You get excited about, ooh, this guy did one thing and it made him all this money. Really? No. What it is it's about having a strong foundation of the fundamentals or the principles. To me, those words are synonymous. Fundamentals and the principles. And then you can add the flashy, fun stuff too. So if you're new, if you've been doing this for a while, it's a great revisit. But if you're new, you have to learn first the fundamentals of online marketing, online entrepreneurship, and online selling. Okay, and that in and of itself is obviously, each one of these secrets really could be its own audio, but this could be an entire course, is just learning the fundamentals of selling and marketing on the internet. So many people I know just don't know. They just don't know. And it's really sad. And I'm still learning, believe it or not. So I'm not saying I have any mastery of it. But here it comes down, the simplest way I can say is every business, every online business just needs a little TLC, right? Which is traffic, leads, and conversion. And you get each one of these through copyright. Every single step is done through copywriting. So TLC is the fundamentals, and the blood that is pumped through those, fuel, the energy that is pumped through that is copywriting. So let me explain. Traffic, as you obviously know, is really the element of and it becomes a strategy for getting people to where you want to get them, for funneling people to wherever you want to get them, right? So they're on location A on the internet, and you want to get them to location B. So if they're on Facebook, you want to get them to your blog, to your website, to your squeeze page, to your landing page, to your sales page, right? That's traffic. That in and of itself requires a strategy, and we'll talk in a moment about the difference between strategy and tactic, and I'll give you my definition. Okay, so traffic that you need a strategy. The next step is what we call a lead. And this is when people talk about building your list, having a database, an email list, etc. And really, list building and your list becomes the lifeblood of your business. So copywriting is kind of the lifeblood of this, these fundamentals, but right at the center of it is your list. And the reason for that is because when you have access to a group of people that have a relationship with you, you have power, you have leverage, you have revenue on demand. So let's say you sell ties, bow ties on the internet, and you have collected a list of customers who have purchased bow ties from you in the past, and you're about to put a down payment on a home, and you need a little extra cash flow, you could write an email saying, buy one, get one free, and overnight you could have a flood of new sales in your inbox with a 24 or 48 hour sale for a buy one, get one free. Simply because you wrote an email and press send. Now, that's the power of list building and having leads. But what is a lead? How do you get it? There's several different ways. And we're not going to get too specific into the details here. Most people know this. But again, this comes down to the fundamentals and the principles of online marketing. And you know, it starts with getting people to somehow, in some way, submit their contact information. So they could submit it for free. On an opt-in form in order to get something for you, from you for free, or they could submit it when they become a customer of yours. So we have customer lists and we have subscriber lists, but this TLC, this L here in TLC is really about a lead. This is about someone who is taken the next step. They've gone from Facebook or they've gone from YouTube or they've gone from Google to now becoming a lead that's interested in more for your business. They've opted in, they've subscribed, they've submitted their information, their email. That's the L, and there is a strategy that you need to deploy in order to build your list. That's why there are courses on traffic and there are courses on list building. And the final one is the C, TLC is for conversions. Now, that's synonymous with selling. And you need a strategy to sell. So once you get the traffic to your website and that traffic opts in, you have a lead, and now this lead, you can sell them or convert them into paying customers. So TLC could also mean customers. So traffic, lead, customers. Okay, same thing. And you need a strategy for doing this. A lot of times people will tell me about how they're creating a product, and I'll say, great, what's your strategy for any one of those? What's your strategy for selling it? How are you gonna sell it? They don't know. They fell into the same trap that I did. They think that if they just put it out there, people just buy it. That doesn't happen most of the time for 99% of us. You have to have a strategy for how you sell it. You need to have a strategy for how you get the lead, and you need to have a strategy for how you're going to drive traffic. But these are the fundamentals. These will never change as long as the internet is the way that it is, where, you know, maybe one day with holographic internets and chips in our brain, it'll be different. But as of right now, your entire job as an online marketer is to drive targeted traffic, people that you know your product, your service, your information is relevant to your web world, your hub, your space on the internet, with the intention of building a list, building a list of interested people, and selling them what you've got. And you have to have a strategy for those. So I want to transition and kind of define strategy versus tactic. I think that's as far as I can go right now. I mean, we could, again, do a whole audio on just what are the principles of online marketing, but that's the simplest I can break it down for you today. So we have strategies for getting traffic. I have strategies for building my list, and I have strategies for selling my products. Okay. And if you look at its TLC, you could go to my blog today, jameswedmore.com. And that would be traffic. I'd get one new visitor. That would be you going to my blog. There's my traffic. And if you go and look on the blog, you will not see anything for sale there. And that's because there's this L step before that, where you will see opportunities to opt in and become a lead before you see opportunities to purchase. Now, this differs from industry to industry, which is why there are also industry principles. So obviously Amazon doesn't do that. You don't go to Amazon.com and there's just opt-in forms and free ebooks everywhere. Okay, so every industry is different. But if you do go to Groupon, I've been there for a while, but if you did go to Groupon at least a couple years ago when they first blew up, you go to Groupon.com and it's just a big opt-in form. They just want your email address. Then they're going to send you daily Groupon offers. Okay? They got you to their website, traffic, then they get the lead, and then they make the sale in your inbox every day. Okay? So then they're, of course, like I said, they're industry-specific principles. So you need to know general marketing principles and industry-specific. You want to avoid throwing flashy tactics on top of flashy tactics without any foundation. It's just building a house of cards, okay? So let me give my definition of what a strategy is versus a tactic, because I feel like most people out there who are just teaching tactics on top of tactics. So a strategy is the path, and the tactic is the execution. So execution without a path is nothing. It's nothing. I've seen people have shown me videos that they've made because, you know, I teach video, and the video will be one of the best videos I've ever seen. It should get an Academy Award. It's so darn good, but it doesn't do anything. It just looks good. It had great execution. They had great tactics, but it doesn't get any results. It doesn't get any traffic. It doesn't get any leads, and it doesn't get any sales. It just sits there looking good, and no one even watches it except me when I review it. There's no strategy. So let me give you an example. Using a completely different analogy for how we can identify the difference, the distinction between a strategy and a tactic. Let's say that you live in California and you want to get to New York City. Step one is to identify your outcome, and that would be to arrive in New York City. Once you identify your outcome, you need to identify a strategy. Notice that the outcome is always the first step. Stephen Covey from 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. His second habit was begin with the end in mind. You always want to start with our outcome. So if our outcome is to get to New York from California, we need to identify a strategy. What's the strategy? How are we going to get there? We could get there by boat. Maybe it would take a long time. By car, that would also take a long time. By train, might speed it up a little bit. Teleportation, that would be my strategy. But of course, there's flying. So our strategy would be to fly from LAX to JFK. That's a strategy. That's going to get you there. That's going to yield you the result. That's the plan. That's the path. But, or shall I say, and if you and I both left from LAX and went to JFK, we'd have the same strategy, but it might look different for each of us because we might have different tactics. Maybe you flew the red eye. Maybe you flew first class and I was in coach. Maybe I got to the airport a little bit later and had to rush, and maybe you are TSA pre-approved and could go right through the line. Maybe you took an Uber car there, so you didn't even have to worry about leaving your car. I'm stuck parking my car at the at the airport and paying $30 a day. Those are our tactics. That's how we execute the strategy. Now look at the difference. We both got to JFK. But according to the tactics that you used, first class, driving in a limo or an Uber car, going through the TSA pre-approved, having a glass of champagne on the plane, you know, all that stuff, bringing your iPad with pre-downloaded movies, you know, that gave you a better experience. Now, we both got to JFK, but your experience was a lot better than mine. Your result ended up being a lot better because of it. Now, it depends really on some of the specifics of our outcome. Maybe the outcome was to get to New York City as soon as possible. Maybe if our outcome was to get to New York City with a stress-free experience. And that's really where, when we get specific on our outcome, we can relate our tactics accordingly. So that hopefully clears up what people have so much, for some reason, so much confusion between the difference of strategy and the difference with tactics, and not muddle those two. So again, success secret number 4 is to create a clear distinction of the marketing principles of online marketing and the distinction of industry-specific principles. And of course, we're talking here about everything from having traffic, leads, and sales, a little TLC in your business, and being able to identify the difference between strategy and tactic. Do you have a strategy for driving traffic? Well, strategy would say, yeah, Facebook ads, okay? But the tactic could be the type of image that you use in your Facebook ads. It could be that you use a video. It could be the type of targeting that you use. Those are tactics, okay? Do you have a strategy for selling? Yes, I use webinar. Okay, great. How you execute that webinar, those are a series of different tactics. The problem that this industry has is people are filled to the brim with more tactics than they'll ever need and very little strategy. Hopefully here today, you've got a clear distinction on that, at least an identification of what the difference between a strategy and a tactic is, so you can apply what people are sharing to you with the strategies that you know or with the principles that you know. So on a scale of 1 to 10, where do you feel like you, at least up until now, fare on this? You feel like you're full of tactics and don't really know what the strategies are, don't really know what the principles or fundamentals are in your industry? That would be down towards the bottom, like a 1 through a 3. And a 10 is complete mastery and distinction of how to generate traffic, leads, and sales in your business. Go ahead and make a note of that right now, and I'll see you on success principle or success secret number 5. Okay, welcome to the 5th secret for successful entrepreneurs, which I've entitled Your Ability to Reframe. I love this concept of reframing. I picked it up originally from Tony Robbins. I'm sure he picked it up from things like NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. Basically, reframing is this idea that whatever is simply is, and we have, through our lens of the world, how we see it, how it has occurred to us, put our own meaning on it. So something that an outside observer or historian documents could document it quite differently than how we experience it. And our ability to remove ourselves, our emotions, our past experiences from whatever has happened or whatever we're experiencing and create a new meaning is one of the most powerful and effective things that we can do in every area of our life, not just our business. And to be honest with you, business is about solving problems. That's all it is. I mean, a successful business has a product that solves a problem for a customer. And how many of us use products or software that are currently every day solving problems for us? How do I reach all my customers? Oh, I could use AWeber. How do I, you know, deliver my products? Oh, I could use online video. I could use WordPress. Okay. It's just a series of problems, and a solution can end up being the next big idea. So your ability to reframe a problem or reframe anything from a problem to an opportunity to possibility to a solution, from to reframe from a loss to a win, from a failure to a lesson, is the biggest secret of all, in my opinion. But it is an ability. It is a skill like anything else. It takes work, it takes effort, and it takes time to master. And I am not anywhere near that, but I work towards it. And I've heard a great quote that says, everything is two subjects. There's the subject and the opposite of it. You know, and we live in a world of duality where we have hot and cold, right or left, north and south. And so if you can look at what is, see the opposite, you can kind of see what the opportunity is that's hiding behind it, okay? So you must be able to identify what is possible with a problem, and that is reframing. If there is a problem, what is possible? What solution, what opportunity is awaiting you? So the great story I'm gonna share with you, which is something I have not brought up yet in this audio, is a little bit about me. Was before I launched Video Traffic Academy and we did this $400,000 in 1 month with a $97 product. About a year before that, I went to work with a business partner on a product. He was the product owner. He had a course, and it was a course on how to get your ex back. And he says, hey, you want to team up with me? And I just laughed. I'm like, you have a product on how to get your ex back? And I said, how's it doing? He said, it's making a sale a day. $30 ebook. I'm like, that sounds amazing. So we went in and we created an agreement where I would get a percentage of sales, and I went to work and I put all my energy and focus on this. And within 60 days or less, we rebuilt the business from the ground up, and I had it to about 10 sales to 15 sales a day at now a $97 price point without any paid advertising. So we were all of a sudden went from a $30 a day to like $1,200 to $1,500 a day. It was unbelievable. And for me, it was quite life-changing as well. That was all passive income. We used YouTube primarily as a traffic driver and built a great email list from it. And it was exciting. It really changed my life in a lot of ways. It empowered me in a whole nother way of, oh my gosh, this stuff really works. And it's, you know, I learned it on a whole nother level. And long story short, one day he just says, well, this is about 6 months later. He goes, well, the business is working, and we're selling a product every day. We're selling product every day. We're making a lot of sales. And I don't really think I need you anymore. And I said, what? He says, well, the thing's all on autopilot. It's all doing itself. You know, it's just doing what it's doing, and I don't need you. I don't see your value anymore. And I was very confused. I said, well, I built it so this would be 100% autopilot. That's the point. That's where the value was. And he says, yeah, well, I don't need you anymore. And he basically fired me as a partner. And I was pretty devastated at first. All of a sudden, I went from all this passive revenue and income in my business that I had worked extremely hard on. I put everything else off to work on this. And it was just gone overnight. And he said, I'll pay you the next month, and then we're done. We'll go our separate ways. And I realized I made a lot of mistakes. I didn't have a contract in writing. He had looked at me as just an employee, not a business partner. And it was devastating on many levels. I mean, even hearing myself now, like the version of me now would be like, why would I ever let something like that happen? But less than 30 days later was when a good friend of mine, Lewis Howes, reached out to me. I didn't tell him about this. He had no idea that this had happened. And he said, I want to create a product with you. I want to create a course on how to do YouTube for small business owners. And I said, okay, let's do it. And again, we went on 3 or 4 months later, we went on and did $400,000 in sales. And I would not have done it if I were working in this other business, because that's where my commitment would have been. I would not have had the time or the energy to do it. And that created a space to go on and be in an industry where I teach everything about video and online video and YouTube. And it wouldn't have happened if I hadn't have been fired or cheated out of a deal, which is what I had made it mean originally. I had originally said, this guy cheated me, this guy wronged me, this guy bailed on me, he stole, basically, you know, because he's taking the rest of the money and running. And I chose eventually, you know, it took a couple of weeks, it was pretty hard at first, to say, no, this is for the best and something better will happen. And today, that is absolute truth, that was one of the best things that could have ever happened to me. Now, hindsight, it means nothing. That's just looking into the past. And I'm grateful for that. And then there's no resentment today or anything like that. The only resentment would have been there is, James, why did I let that happen to myself, right? I took responsibility. And today I would never let something like that even occur in an instant. But in hindsight, to just say, oh yeah, that was the best thing that could have ever happened, has little value. But in the moment when it's happening, to have the ability to reframe it, to say, wait a second, I didn't even enjoy working with the guy. This is a blessing in disguise. Something bigger is gonna come my way. Now that I have more time, now that I'm more available, something else can happen, something new and exciting that I wouldn't have been able to see if I was so busy working on this other project that I didn't really have my heart in anyways. I mean, it's not my life purpose to teach kids how to get their ex-girlfriends back. But doing that in hindsight has little value compared to doing it in the moment. So any problem that we're experiencing, whether it's business, life, whatever, how can we reframe it? So how can, notice that every subject is two subjects. This was the subject of losing your income or being fired, basically. You've basically fired as business partner, so being fired. But what's the opposite of being fired? And that's obviously being hired. And that's exactly what happened. I went from the experience of loss of a business to the experience of creating a new one. And that's where, if we just choose to look at something differently, right? Wayne Dyer said, change the way you look at things and the things around you change. And it's so absolutely true, but you can't just do that in hindsight. It's nice to reflect and it feels good, but the power is doing it in the moment. To say, here I am being cheated, and you know, you start to get angry and resentful and blame somebody and say, wait a second, I take full responsibility. How can I reframe this so that I can see what's possible for me? And what was possible for me is a new beginning, a new opportunity, time for me to step out on my own and do my own. And that's what we have to be able to do when we face adversity. And that is extremely powerful. That is success secret number five, whether you're any type of entrepreneur, self-employed, or just the driver of your own life. You need to be able to master that. So where are you on that level of mastery? 10 is absolute mastery. 1 is no, everything looks down and yucky and gloomy. The ability to reframe is take what may look negative and look at it through a different lens so that it is much more positive or opportunistic. That is success secret number 5. All right, let's take a look right now at success secret number 6 for successful entrepreneurs, which is what I call crossing the survival threshold. This is something I've noticed for a very long time now. There is a distinct line in the sand that divides all entrepreneurs that I experience that pop into my sphere, whether it's on Facebook or my email list or watching a YouTube video of somebody or a customer. And there's two camps. There's the camp of survival and there's the camp of thrival or thriving, right? And I will say that 90% of them are in survival. And when they're in this survival camp, I can feel it, I can sense it, and I just know it. And if I can, I'm sure their customers can as well. So what I'm talking about are these survival entrepreneurs that kind of given off a vibe of desperation. Everything is about what's in it for me. How can I get mine? How can I figure it out for me? Me, 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 me. Everything is survive. And what, you know, just look at the elements of survival. It's how can I get pay rent? How can I get food? How can I get paid? And that works when you're an employee and you want to be demanding to your boss, sure, but not as an entrepreneur. In fact, people, it repels people and it goes, takes them, you know, the opposite direction. And I feel like all of us entrepreneurs have that as part of our journey, that there has to be a wall that you jump over. And some do it very quickly. So for me, it took a little bit of a time. Others, they never do it. Others, it's just very slow, where they jump from the survival camp into the camp of thriving, okay? So again, the survival people are the ones that are doing it because they bought the ebook, they bought the course, and they're just going through the motions. And this guy told me to do these 5 steps. I did these 5 steps. Where's my money? I didn't get paid. It didn't work for me. Blah, 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 right? Where's my money? Buy my stuff, right? You know exactly who I'm talking about. Then there is the camp of thrive. And these are the people that just have a sense of being, just a way about them where they, you don't get a sense that they're just out to get theirs. They're just doing it because it's something they're passionate about. They're doing it because it's something they love. They're doing it because they want to impact the people that they choose to work with, and they don't have an attachment to how much money will this make me? I need the money so I can survive. It's more, how can I help? How can I serve? And most importantly, how can I deliver value? So really, that's what the jump over the wall is about. Going from, how do I make it all about me, to how do I make it all about everybody else? How do I go about giving myself value to how do I make it about giving other people value? And that's something that I did long ago. And when people will talk about the moment that they truly do that, authentically do that, not fake do it, but truly do that, that's when their business explodes. See, here's the opposite paradox that people say, yeah, I will do that once I have enough money. I'll care about giving value and I'll care about others once I got mine. And it's the opposite. It's really, you have to be in the thrive camp first and care more about your output into the world and how you impact, help, and serve your customers, your subscribers, and anybody who even falls into that circle first. Then your business can thrive. It's really hard because it's backwards. It sounds backwards. So most people will stay in the survival camp for so long because they're like, I just need to get mine and I need to get this and I need to make sure I pay the rent and the bills and the this and the that. And you just, their marketing then reflects it. Because here's what it comes down to. If you're in the survival camp, your actions are based out of fear. You're doing things safe. You're doing it out of need, necessity, and of course, most importantly, you're doing it out of fear. And nothing powerful, productive, life-changing, inspiring, and expansive can be done out of fear. I don't care what anyone tells you. I don't care what you tell me. It just can't be done. And people can smell that fear a mile away. So it's not about, okay, let me get mine first, then I can do this whole thing that James is talking about thriving. You have to get rid of the fear first and really deliver, you know, the opposite of fear is love, and deliver everything from a place of love, detachment from how much money it's going to make you, and really just giving the impact and the value. And if you decide to do this, this might be one of those that you're like, no. And then I'm going to say, okay, are you being coachable? But this is one of those that when you begin to do that and you act from that place, you will experience thriving on a whole nother plane. Because that's how you attract an audience. That's how you attract customers. Especially if you are your own personal brand. People aren't attracted to someone who's afraid and pushing and forceful. They're attracted to the person that embodies who they want to be. So you have to be who your audience wants you to be. And people will be drawn to that. Not a fearful survival type person. Okay? This one is huge. So number six is crossing the survival threshold and thriving. Saying no to surviving and actually thriving in your business. And that means not focusing on you, but focusing on how you can impact, help, support, add value, and transform your audience. And doing that first, leading from that foot first, not from a place of fear. Where do you feel you line up on that scale? Go ahead and write that down or make a mental note. 10 is a heck yeah, that's totally me. 1 is like, oh, I'm living everything out of fear. Hey, you don't need to share it with me. This is all personal and private. I'm not judging. But it's great to be honest with yourself because you get to look at where you need areas to work on. That's all. That's all it means. Okay, let's look at number 7. Success secret number 7. Real simple, short one, easy, also very important, which is the idea that wisdom comes from action and experience, not this audio. Okay, so everything that I've shared with you is based on the lessons I've learned from the experience that I have had, the actions that I've taken, the failures I've had, quote unquote failures, the wins I've had, the conversations I've had with other people that result in things, not just from listening and reading and then regurgitating. There's something so powerful in the action itself. So I started with this audio as saying that there's something wrong with the idea of just take massive action. So action in and of itself will not yield success. And it's a component of it. It's a piece of the pie, but it's not the only thing. And hopefully these past 6 ingredients or 6 principles or success secrets have alluded to what the full equation truly is. I'm still trying to identify what the real true equation is myself. Some of it might just be some dumb blind luck, but of course action is one of those steps and we can't deny that. Okay. But again, going looking back at like number six, where we have this fear or love dichotomy, taking an action out of fear or survival is not an action that will get you great results. Taking action out of this idea of, oh, I just need to have a productive day just so I can get a lot done and feel productive is not right. But there is something that when you get to it, that level of 7, 8, 9, or 10 with these other six principles, that when you take action from there, not only do you get the results, but you get a whole new set of lessons, experiences, and wisdom for yourself. So I want to share a way that I go through courses and training and programs that I want you to go through courses as well. So I think the traditional way that people will purchase a course, let's say you purchase my YouTube marketing course, what you would do, most people, is they watch, they buy the course, they watch the videos, and when they watch the videos, they learn it, and then they do it, and then they fail, or they succeed. I'm not saying they fail every time, but I'm just giving an example. So the way I like to do it is I would buy the course, and then I would listen and watch, and then I would do it again, okay? So the learning phase, now this is, you know, I believe huge to get, is the learning phase comes in from the action that you take, not from watching the video. So all these seven secrets I've shared with you will not be as powerfully learned as if you experience them for yourself in your life. So let's look at the distinction again. Most people watch videos, learn it. In other words, what I mean by learn it is they say, someone says 1 + 1 = 2, and they go, okay, 1 + 1 = 2, and then they do it and fail. And so what I'm saying is learn it after. Take the steps, whether you're learning something, you know, new, going through a training program, etc. Experience it, take the action, and then go back and say, what did I learn from my experience, from my actions? And this is just so important and such a huge distinction that words do not teach, only action does. Only your past experiences and action is the true teacher for you in life. So that's exactly how we do everything in my business, is I basically have to almost unlearn what I've learned and then put it back together. So if I bought a course on YouTube advertising, I would go, okay, follow the steps, got it. And then I would look at everything that I did, and I would have to learn from my actions, not the videos, and almost like taking it apart and putting it back together again. So that's the final one, where you have to take the action to learn for yourself. And you have to learn from your actions, not from the words of this audio, not from watching a video or anything. It really, the final truths and lessons have to come from your experience in taking that action. And that is the perfect place to leave you, is with, once you get all these other steps down, is you have to take the action to get the results that you're after. So there you have it. These are the seven secrets to online success. I had a blast creating this audio, and I hope you had a blast listening to it. I know it was kind of long and there's a lot to go over here. It might be advantageous for you to go over it again. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. So maybe we'll have some way that you can leave comments and get back to me with feedback, etc. I want to make sure that you have rated each of these seven steps where you feel you fall on them as a gradient scale, 10 being absolute mastery and 1 being, I didn't even know this had existed, right? Including this last step about taking action. So the way you would grade this last one is 10 means you're superb action taker and result getter, action, result, action, result. 1 is I really just been, you know, listening to a bunch of courses, buying a bunch of courses and not taking any action. You won't really learn with all those courses that you've taken. You learn once you start taking the action from those courses. Okay. So that is so important. And then what you want to do is you want to look at where you fare with each of these seven principles, with each of these seven secrets. Is there most of them really high, and then there's one or two that's really low, or only one or two that's really high and the rest are really low? And this will give you a great idea as to kind of how to navigate from here on out. Hopefully it does. Again, I could go on for hours and I could add so many of these quote unquote secrets or principles. These are just some of the things that really stood out to me, some things that have had a huge impact on me. I've been obsessed about business, entrepreneurship, online marketing, video, and personal development and personal growth. And I hope you are as well. I think it does take some level of like a hungry thirst, put words hungry and thirst together, for knowledge, for more information, for growing, for pushing the boundaries, for pushing the mental idea of what you believe is possible for you, yourself, and your business. And that's really all this was designed to help you to do, was to set the foundation for some simple principles, some new way of looking at things and discovering things in your life and your business. So I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you listened to it again. Thank you so much for making it through. That's impressive, first and foremost. So thank you. Have a wonderful day, and hopefully we'll do more audios like this shortly. Take care.